Heroin use in Alaska is on the rise. The Drug Enforcement Administration reports a tenfold increase in the amount of heroin seized between 2013 and 2014. I'm Lori Townsend. Why has there been such a dramatic increase, and what's being done to stop the flow of this highly addictive drug to Alaska? How is it impacting urban and rural communities? We'll hear from recovering addicts, the FBI, and a city council member who says his life was threatened by a drug dealer. The rapid increase in addiction to heroin is the topic today on Talk of Alaska.
Today's program is underwritten in part by
Spinard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spinard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
Alaska Pacific University is a private liberal arts and sciences university that emphasizes student engagement with the social, cultural, and environmental issues in Alaska and the world. This message sponsored by APU. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Burglaries and other theft in the Bethel region, reports of used syringes littering areas of the Matsu Valley. The Alaska Dispatch recently reported that Anchorage and Juneau's needle exchange program took in more than 200,000 used syringes in the last year. It's difficult for most of us to imagine using heroin. The idea of injecting a drug is not appealing to the majority of us, but for reasons we hope to learn more about today, increasing numbers of people may be doing exactly that. Joining me to discuss the scope of the problem is Special Agent Kurt Ormberg. Agent Ormberg is the supervisory special agent overseeing violent crime for the FBI in Alaska. He joins us by phone from Kenai. Good morning.
Good morning, Laura.
Thanks so much for being with us. And I want to invite callers to also join us if you have a story to tell, whether you're in recovery yourself, or if you have seen an uptick in drug trafficking in your community, if you felt unsafe at certain times because of drug trafficking, or if you have a story about what your community is doing to stop it, you can join our conversation statewide at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or in the Anchorage area, you can call us at 550-8422. 550-8422 or email talk@alaskapublic.org. So, Special Agent Ormberg, help us understand how big the heroin problem is in Alaska. How long have you been supervising the Violent Crimes Unit, and how has heroin use changed in that time?
Well, that's a multi-tier question. So, I've been here for 2 years, and along with violent crimes, and just give you a general what violent crimes covers. That's violent crimes against children, human trafficking, which has been a topic up here in Alaska as well. Includes traditional stuff when you think about the FBI, bank robbery, fugitives. It also encompasses the Safe Streets Task Force, which deals with gangs and violent offenders in the area. And that's what I cover within the squad. The problem with heroin in Alaska, first off, I don't think it's unique to Alaska. I think, as a whole, the United States has seen an uptick in heroin use, heroin overdose. It's been seen in the media, usually with it's someone famous that there's an OD. I think that draws public awareness. But there has been an uptick, I think, nationally. I don't think we're unique in that. Since I've been here, just kind of numbers, you're looking at 2013, you know, seizures of heroin were around 5 to 6, 7 pounds for most of the federal agencies, whereas 2014 we were over 50 pounds of seized heroin. So that shows you that there's an increase just on seizures alone.
50 pounds sounds like an extraordinary amount. How does that translate into actual amounts that someone would use?
So that's, when you talk about seizure, you're talking about seizure throughout the state. You're also talking about seizure as it's coming in, Laurie. So that's another aspect of it. From those seizures, you know, you think that obviously we don't get it all. We don't even get a tenth of it. That does make it in, that's broken down, that's processed, and that's spread throughout our large state. And that's spread out. It's stepped on, which is a common term for actually being cut, so that the product can create more product and obviously more profit. And then again, it spreads throughout the state. So 50 pounds sounds like a lot in a seizure, but when you're dealing with a population of 640,000, that spreads out. And that's the goal. That's what drug trafficking is, right? It's taking a large quantity at the dealer level and getting it out to user level.
Do the amounts reported, you know, you were talking about 50 pounds seized. Is that the total for the year, or is that just what the FBI and DEA have seized, and there are other amounts that were seized by local law enforcement or state troopers?
Yeah, good question. So that's for us, us and DEA for seizures. We usually, one of the best tools that we have in battling drug trafficking is task forces. And so those numbers, when we generate numbers, the numbers often come from our task forces, which are federal, state, and local law enforcement working together, common goal. And that's been one of the best tools up here in Alaska that we're really starting to exploit. So those numbers come from those task forces, but that's not to say that there aren't other seizures that aren't reported within those numbers. Those are the numbers we feel safe and confident in giving out.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're talking about the rise of heroin use in Alaska. You can join our conversation if you know of efforts in your community to push back against drug trafficking, if you've had an instance where you felt unsafe yourself, or if you're in recovery and want to share your story. You can call us at 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255, or locally in Anchorage, 550-8422. What have you learned, Agent Ornberg, about the why? Why has there been this rise in heroin trafficking and use? A lot is known about how addictive the drug is, how dangerous it is. It's not being made in a controlled setting so that people have any idea of the dose amount. We, as you mentioned, we see high-profile overdose deaths of celebrities, and yet people are using this illegal drug. What's known about the why?
I think that's a great question, and it's one that I think ourselves, the FBI, DEA, we're focused on. Why the shift? Why the change? I think when we look at it, Lori, we had a generation of prescription pills. I think everybody's familiar with the prescription pill problem that we've seen over the last decade, whether it's hydrocodone, Oxycontins. We have created a generation of drug users in which it was, you know, what comes out of a pill bottle is far more, and I'm using quotation marks, safe to use for recreational use. So our opiates 10 years ago, very strong, very powerful, with I don't want to say limited control, but control as far as when a new drug is out and being utilized for prescription. We don't think of the abuses that come with it. We think of only the positives at first. From that time, we've realized with some of these opiate-based prescription drugs that there was a problem. We were starting to, to have a drug problem, an addiction problem. We've gotten smart. Pharmaceutical companies have done, you know, time-released coated capsules, basically taking away the ability to get high from opiate-based prescription drugs. There's a lot of good intel out there that what that's created is a population of drug addicts that are looking for that opiate high. And heroin has become an easier, more accessible, and more importantly, cheaper alternative to prescription drug opiate-based narcotics. And I think that's contributed largely to the rise that we've seen in heroin.
So people are getting prescription drugs, or at least a certain percentage of the users of heroin are starting off legitimately with prescription drugs for perhaps an injury or some type of pain, become addicted, can no longer get that prescription filled, and then they're turning to heroin. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, and I think that's consistent with what we're seeing. I think additionally, too, with the hand-in-hand with that has been the meth in the last 10 years as well, methamphetamine use. I think, you know, over a decade ago, it was common for law enforcement to seize methamphetamine that was at 60, 70, 75% purity. You know, again, the cartels, they're involved. It's their job to get a pure product out, make more money. And we've seen the rise of methamphetamine into to the 90 percentile. So you're talking about a very, very powerful drug, very powerful high. A lot of times within methamphetamine, you're looking at a high that can last days. With that high, you would see people that, you know, do you want to be high for 5, 6, 7 days? They would start to use an alternative drug to bring them off that high. And heroin is a very commonly used drug in collaboration with methamphetamine, especially with that high that high drug percentage, that high purity. And I think that's also created a addiction problem with heroin, the use of both methamphetamine, again, with a purity level, using heroin to come down with. And so those two factors is why we believe that there's been a rise in heroin use.
Are the majority of users that you interact with injecting the heroin? Earlier in the open of the show, I mentioned an article in the Alaska Dispatch News about all these used syringes that are laying around out in the Mat-Su Valley that people are unfortunately coming across and finding. Is that the majority of how users take in heroin, is through injection, or are they using it in other ways as well?
I think traditionally you've seen injection. In Alaska, I think it'd be safe to say injection as well as smoking it. I have a bunch of little kids, and we like to go out and do geocache, right? So you go out and look for these little geocached little prizes in different areas. And I personally, in the last year, have seen more needles in places and parks and turnouts. It's hard for us to give you that specific number, because usually we're dealing with the distributors, the traffickers themselves, rather than the use end. But I've personally seen more needles. And if you talk to local law enforcement that's out there on the streets every day, they're going to tell you needles and, again, smoking as well.
Well, it's clear to see that there's a lot of concern. We already have several calls on the line, and we're going to go to a few of those in just a moment. People are clearly interested in the topic, and there's a lot of concern out there. But Special Agent Orenberg, I wanted to ask about where the heroin is coming from. What's known about where this drug is being made, and then how it's making its way into Alaska?
So, you know, the United States, we break down by different regions in which and the East Coast may get their drugs from a different place than the West Coast or the Northwest. I think it's, for us here in Alaska, the transient route from Mexico, from Central America, access from the cartels getting to Alaska is probably the easiest route. Consistently in our cases, we've had direct connections to the Sinaloa cartel, which is obviously the largest cartel in Mexico. They have the ability, the means, the laboratories to generate mass amounts of product. For us here in Alaska, whether it's through mail, UPS, FedEx, shipping, boats, wherever there is an ability to transport goods, we're going to get narcotics in. And it's, you know, it's our job to find it. It's our job to shut down those networks and those transient means and methods. But traditionally, that's how you're going to see it get into Alaska, Laura.
Of course, you can't really know how much is getting in that you're not catching, because you don't know what you can't find. But any idea at all of how that may have changed, or what, if you got 50 pounds in 2014, any idea how many pounds may have made it through?
That's a good question. That would be the equivalent of you asking me, you know, how many domestic violence incidents have happened that we're
right.
not aware of.
Yes,
it's just
course.
Not something that we can, I wouldn't even make a guess, Lori.
Okay.
I would tell you that, you know, Alaska's continuing to grow. This drug problem is continuing to grow, and we're also a state with a larger population, and it's becoming it's a state that's easier to travel, it's desirable to come to, and with that comes problems as well, positives but negatives as well.
Where's the intersection between, you're the supervisor for the Violent Crimes Unit, talk about how heroin distribution and use intersects with violent crime, and also with human trafficking. Are these things all coming together, and tell us about how that work sort of intersects with your violent crime unit.
All right, that's another great question. I'm going to have to take notes on this one. A couple of things. First, on violent crimes, I would say the narcotic trade is a violent, violent trade. We have a theory that where you have drugs and money, you will have violence. Within the violent crime squad, I am lucky enough to supervise the Safe Streets Task Force. This is an FBI initiative that started in 1991, in which it said, look, we want to assist our communities. And that's something I really want to put out here, Lori. The FBI in Anchorage, its job is to enforce the laws, conduct investigations, federal-level investigations, but here in Alaska, to take care of, this is our community, and to work with our local partners, state and local, to address issues. Safe Streets addresses what you have as the most violent offenders, and with that, usually your violent offenders are involved in the drug trade. Some are deeply involved, layered involved. It is their number one way to do business. Some are partially involved, but usually there is a connection between your violent offenders, your gang members, and drug trafficking. It goes hand in hand. So with that, Safe Streets is the one that is usually the unit within my squad that's most engaged in what we call DTOs, drug trafficking organizations. On Safe Streets, you have Anchorage Police Department is on there as a full-time member. The ATF is on there, United States Coast Guard. We have a Safe Streets element in Kodiak Police Department, in Juneau, in Ketchikan. And these are officers that work with federal agents to address these problems, whether it's prosecuted through the state or it's federal. That doesn't matter. What it is, it's basically bringing all the tools to the fight that the federal law enforcement, local, state, and all that intelligence that we have. I mean, sitting down in a room and talking about it and addressing the issue. So that's the squad as far as, you know, what is our involvement with violent crimes? How does that relate to the heroin trafficking?
Mm-hmm.
You asked a great question, you know, which is a topic here in Alaska, which is sex trafficking as well. How does drug trafficking, violent crimes, also relate to sex trafficking, which is another unit within my squad? And I would tell you they go hand in hand. There is a great connection, large connection between that. Trafficking, as we know about victims, those that are basically forced to sell themselves for the profit of another. One question I'm constantly asking when I work trapping is, how can a young girl or boy, in some cases, sell themselves? And how do they get to that stage? And I always say, well, first off, it's a victim. So mm-hmm. It's a victim, someone who has been forced into that, whether it is by another individual or it's by a situation that they have found themselves in. We have something that's called survival sex, where I think is more traditional with heroin addicts. It's sex for money to be able to fill that next need, that next drug need. Or there is a pimp that has come in that says, hey, I will provide you with the drug that your body now requires. You need to sell yourself X amount of times. So that's the crossover that you're going to see between sex trafficking and heroin use.
And violent crime. If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about the rise of heroin use, distribution, trafficking, addiction in Alaska. Right now, we're speaking with FBI Special Agent Kurt Orenberg. He is the supervisor of the Violent Crimes Unit, and he's talking to us about the FBI's work at trying to stop the flow of heroin into the state. You know, you were just talking about addicts. We're also going to get to the phones. Thank you to the callers who are waiting to join our conversation, and we'll be talking to some folks in Bethel here in just a bit as well. Special Agent Orenberg, you were talking about addicts and the intersection of human trafficking and drug addiction. We were hoping to be joined this morning by a young woman who is in recovery, and she must have decided that she just wasn't quite ready to come on and talk about her experience, but we're hoping that maybe she'll feel like sharing her story at some point in the future and we can have her come back to the studio. I wanted to ask what you can tell us about what's known about the distribution and how it's moving around the state. Is it just people taking it in baggage, or what's known about that? And what can you share about what's known?
So historically, when you talk about the trafficking networks, you know, the cartel, the way it's going to get up to Alaska, that's something that federally, whether it's us or the DEA, we would have some level of expertise. When you talk about how it's moving throughout the state of Alaska, again, that's when our partnerships with the local and state, whether it's Alaskan State Troopers, whether it is Anchorage Police Department, Fairbanks Police Department, those are where your subject matter experts are for the networks throughout the state, and that's again why those task forces and us working together is so important. To touch on a little bit, whether it's mailing packages in, whether it is, Alaska is very unique because we're isolated. So most of our goods are coming in from plane. They're coming in by boat. So those are going to be your trafficking routes in Lauren. That's how our packages are getting here. The spread from there is that's when the local law enforcement is critical. The intel is critical. Who are the people that are picking up the packages? What drug trafficking organizations or what gangs are there to get it and to see it distributed out to the state? Who has connections, whether it be in Kodiak Island, whether it be in Southeast Alaska? Can it be flown out from there? Can it be driven out from there? Is there someone that has a plane here that's involved in this DTO? And that's where we use this task force approach. And the community, I always say, anytime I give a presentation about violent crimes, I always tell people it's a very simple formula for the decrease of violent crimes. And that includes drug trafficking. And that is, resources, having people work that have a level of expertise, and community involvement. Those three elements, I guarantee, will give you a decrease in violent crimes. And that task force approach is why we use it, because there's resources. You're bringing in the best of the best local cops that know what's going on. Federal agents that understand the problem, and it's our job to get out to the community and find information from them.
Well, I wanted to ask about community involvement, and then we'll move on to some calls here. But one thing that I also wondered about as far as distribution in the state is it must be a much more difficult to find heroin as opposed to finding large amounts of marijuana, which takes up a big space and has quite a pungent smell. Heroin, from some of the stories that we've had here, can be very, very thin, small packages, and still contain quite a number of doses. How is it normally shipped around the state?
Again, that's a great observation. It is a drug that's more compact. Historically, body carries is still, whether it was in the 70s, 80s, or now, individuals that are carrying it within their body is still an approach that's utilized, or a technique that's utilized. Packaging within packaging. Everyone's trying to, those that are involved in the DTOs, the drug trafficking organizations, or the violent gangs that are involved in this, they're trying to beat canine dogs and the techniques that we use. So packaging it within, coffee, within other things that give off an odor, car carries where there's compartments within vehicles where the narcotics are hidden. These are all techniques not unique to Alaska, but they're used throughout the United States in transport.
Well,
but you're absolutely right, Lori. Certain drugs are much larger and bulkier, and heroin is not one of those drugs. And I always say, too, when I talk to law enforcement in the lower 48, what makes Alaska unique is we don't need huge quantities to have major devastating impact on our villages or some of our remote rural areas. We don't need that large quantity. A couple of ounces, a half a pound, that can just absolutely be destructive to a community. And that's why it's so important that we catch it and that we prosecute those that are involved in the trafficking.
Well, thank you so much, Special Agent, FBI Special Agent Kurt Ornberg, for joining us to help us sort of better understand the scope and the serious nature of the heroin problem in Alaska. Thanks so much for your time. We're going to let you go now and get on to some callers. Thanks again for joining us.
Thanks, Lori. Anytime.
All right. Well, let's turn to some callers now who have been waiting patiently to talk about their own experiences. First, we're going to hear from Serena in Wasilla. Good morning.
Hi there.
Did you have an idea?
My one biggest concern in the state of Alaska is obviously the addiction rise. And I, too, am a recovering addict. And my addiction stemmed from pain clinics. It seems like the pain clinics are on a rise as well in the state of Alaska. And our state needs better resources. We don't hardly have any treatment centers. You know, there's one detox facility that I know of in Anchorage that there's such a long waiting list that people are dying as they're trying to get into detox. As far as trafficking and the drugs coming in, we do have to do something about it, but it's always going to find its way in. I think we need to focus on helping our Alaskans that are addicted and give better resources to them. A lot of people seem to want to say, you know, throw them in jail, you know, throw the key away, and that's not the answer. There's such a high recidivism rate when it comes to drug addicts in jail, and honestly, it doesn't help. Jail does not help. I mean, sometimes it does, but not all the time, and we just need more resources to help, you know, to help people.
Serena, you mentioned that you're in recovery. Can you tell us a little bit about how that struggle has been for you?
It's been an ongoing struggle. I started very young, and like I said, it started from because I have a back injury, and I was actually I was about 14 years old when my back started to hurt, but it is not easy. It's a very, very hard struggle, but I think that, you know, learning a trade or finding your talents and, you know, just staying busy and finding things that make life worth living, you know, children, family. I mean, I can't say everyone's going to be successful, but there is a chance and there's hope, especially if the community can pull together. And, you know, I'm not saying give a hand out, but a hand up.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been able to stay sober?
5 years this month.
Well, congratulations. Good. That's excellent work. And thank you so much for calling in and sharing your story with us. This is Talk of Alaska, and we're talking today about heroin use in the state, the abuse of it, the trafficking of it. And there is obviously great interest as we have a number of folks on the line who want to share their stories. We'll be doing that. We'll also be talking to some folks from Bethel when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2015 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend, and today we're talking about the very serious problem of heroin and heroin addiction in Alaska. We just heard from a special agent with the FBI. We're going to go in just a moment to some folks in Bethel and talk with them, but I did want to also hear from a couple more callers. So we're going to go now to Scott in Homer. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning, Lori. Thank you for this time and this program. I first shot heroin in 1971 or 72. The threshold drug, as they called it, had been tobacco. My aunt left them around everywhere, and I picked that up when I was 10 and would take the cigarettes and hand them out as a kind of a social thing. And I became a drug dealer later in my life, and I just sort of ended up with heroin by accident. And liked it. And since this is about the matrix of heroin and violence and recovery, I probably would attribute to the violence to helping my recovery. I got to the point where I could no longer see myself as a, you know, hippie, peace and love drug dealer, and was pushing the powders and pills, and people were dying. I didn't ever see anyone die, but that was just part of the trade, unfortunately, in the 70s. And the fast forward is that in the 80s, I was required to attend Narcotics Anonymous as a part of a training exercise. I'd never had horrible, you know, lows as a drug addict, but I had a lot of the problems that I carried with me, and I was trying to help people, but I wasn't clear yet, and so I was required to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And I think the one thing I have to say is that stopping the flow interdiction, clearly, the drug on war, the war on drugs, clearly doesn't work. It is all about prevention, which I, as a paraprofessional counselor in drug counseling, would say that it means that we have to solve deeper societal problems.
So you took this, you were involved in it's not training, but you were able to get some treatment in the 80s. Have you been clean since that time?
Well, it got really deep. I haven't used street drugs since I started Narcotics Anonymous. I had 2 years and 9 months of clean, sober time, and it's a whole other story. I ended up in, getting treatment for depression and other issues, and so things kind of went off the track. The point is, though, that peer-to-peer recovery is the cheapest and, I believe, most effective method for prevention.
So people just that know the struggle are the best equipped to help others get to a better place.
Yeah, I went to my first meetings in Fairbanks, and there were people who were fairly big-time drug dealers I'd looked up to. I was shocked to see them there.
Well, thank you so much, Scott, for calling in, and it's good information for folks to have that if someone else has been clean and sober for a number of years and feels secure in their recovery, they can reach out and help others get to that same place. We're going to go now to our folks in Bethel who are joining us from KYUK, member station KYUK in Bethel. First, we'll talk with Byron Bakensky. I hope I'm saying your last name correctly, Byron. Are you there? Good morning.
Hello. Hey.
Hi, Byron. Thanks for joining us. And we also have Tracy on the line with us. Tracy is also joining us from the Bethel area. And Tracy, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much to both of you for joining us. Byron, let's start with you. You are a Bethel City Council member, and the City Council has been active in speaking out. You've been particularly active in speaking out against what you see as heroin, the rise of heroin in your area. Tell us a little bit about your observations and then what happened because of the fact that you've been speaking out about this.
Well, for years now, before all your callers before were right, that people started off with painkillers in the beginning. And when OxyContin started to get phased out, a lot of people turned to heroin, which is very addictive. And I see a lot of people in my own class that are addicted to it, and it's very hard to see them go through those withdrawals, and they have no way to get treatment here in Bethel. And as other people said, it's a very long line to get treatment in Bethel. And right now, what I'm doing is raising awareness for heroin because I think that's the first step to identify the problem. And right now, we're working on a an action memorandum for administration and to give to the police department. And that will be on May 12th at our city council meeting.
You had a bad encounter with someone who didn't appreciate you, your activism in speaking out against heroin and the dangers of it. Tell us about that experience.
Well, somebody came to my house, probably a drug addict or someone that was paid by a dealer. But I didn't think much of it at that time because they came to my door and ran off. But the next morning I found a note in my car that said, you better back off the heroin issue before you kill yourself. If you go to the police, we'll know about it, ha-ha. And the next time I see you outside of your shop, you won't make it back in.
And I know that you turned this information over to the police. Has anything come of it?
Right now, they're still investigating it. I don't know what any leads that they have now, but the person in control of it is one of my friends, so he will give me updates whenever he gets them.
All right. Well, let's get Tracy in the conversation now, too. Tracy, you're both young. You're both in your 20s. And Tracy, you have been in treatment before. You're in treatment right now. Tell us a little bit about how you got started. You were telling me on the phone the other day that you were able to order some drugs online. I think you said it was Tramadol. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, first I'd like to start off saying thank you for having me on your show, and I'd like to say that my name is Tracy Faulkner, and I'm an addict in recovery. My addiction had started, from when I was really young, about 13 years old. I started smoking weed and drinking, trying to be cool like the older kids, trying to fit in. It eventually led to me experimenting with pills, Tramadol, which led to me taking OxyContin. Then I figured out that I could order them online in any amount, which I'd probably do like at least once a week, and which led to doing heroin. I mean, they quit making the Tramadol and the OxyContin. I didn't realize that there was heroin in the OxyContin. And then I got introduced to heroin and just went, downhill from there. I mean, it was just a progression for me, which led up to, losing my life to it.
Were the other drugs that you were using injection drugs, or was heroin the first time you started actually injecting?
I never injected heroin. I smoked heroin.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you had mentioned that in the past you were in treatment and it was court-ordered, but this time you're in treatment because you put yourself there. What changed for you? Why did you change, or what changed?
I was really looking at life pass me by. I was stuck. I was stuck in a blackness that overcame me, with this addiction, these drugs. And I couldn't see the light, so for me, I had to have it come within. I really wanted to, wanted it from within. And for me to really reach out and ask for help, and put my pride aside and ask for help, admit that I'm an addict. And I know that's very hard for a lot of addicts to do, but, that's what needs to be done. Is the first step is to admit that I'm an addict and ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really advocating on getting more help in our community because there isn't a lot of information on heroin and its use with that all drugs that are coming into here. I'm coming from an addict's perspective, an addict side, coming from where, I've been there, I've done that, and it's a hard thing to beat, but this community needs to understand how bad it really is, and something needs to be done. I mean, for me, I look at it as that we're all people, and we all are fogged by this, this addiction in ways of from the addict side and on the other side of the people that don't understand it, they're shoving it under the rug, and something needs to be done. There needs to be more help out here. There's not, anything for us to come off the withdrawals with, and it was a struggle for me to come off heroin. So I'm really advocating for a detox center. more help with treatment, more of them understanding on, you know, the heroin and other drugs, not just alcohol, but, you know, it's infiltrating in through the cracks of our community, and something needs to be done, you know. So,
Tracy, how difficult is it? Is it a daily struggle, an hourly struggle to stay away from heroin? How hard is your recovery?
In the beginning, it was minute by minute, you know. My mom, you know, I hear from her, you know, it's minute by minute. You know, a lot of people say it's day by day, but for me in the beginning it was, you know, taking that minute by minute, you know, and knowing that I wanted better, you know, for my family, for the people that I affected, you know, and this is what's pushing me, because I'm seeing how now that I'm clear-minded, I'm seeing the negative effects that I caused my loved ones, my family, my friends, my community, that, you know, that I affected my addiction. And it's just a hard thing that I need to face, but knowing today that I'm better in my life, you know, it means the world, you know. So just knowing that there's a better way to live, you know, it's just amazing feeling. So,
well, I want to bring in another caller here, and this is someone in Wasilla. Olivia is in Wasilla, and oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, that's Kim in Anchorage. So sorry, we had the wrong line up there. So, Kim, good
Hello.
Morning. And we have, as you've been listening, we have Tracy Faulkner on the line and Byron McKensky. Tell us about your story here with heroin.
First of all, thank you very much for having this show. And to the people that are calling in that are recovering addicts, my heart goes out to you. I understand what you're going through, not personally. I'm not an IV drug user or hard drug user, but my daughter is. And my family has been devastated by it. She, of course, got started like most people with pharmaceutical drugs from doctors. And then she found out that she could get heroin cheaper. And she has, since it's been 15 years, she's lost custody of her children. The whole family is devastated by it. It's not just the addict. And one thing that I would like to address is the stigma of the addict and how people judge them. They don't all, this hidden secret of these people that you don't want to know and that you would shun, it's not them. It's our children, their parents, their families. Everybody's affected by it, and we love our addicts. We don't love the addiction, but we do love our addicts. And you try and try, and then my daughter would come to me at different periods and want help, and I would search and search and try to get her help. Finally, she went into Ernie Turner Center just a few weeks ago. She was there 7 days. She was detoxed. I'd never seen her sober in 15 years when I saw her after that, and there was nowhere for her to go. Nowhere. So she ended up going to a place called Damascus House that I've never even had support myself with this, because it's the hidden drug secret, or I'm using quotes. So you don't even tell your best friends. You don't even tell your family members. You just struggle and struggle, and you try to pick up the pieces. So recently, though, there was a newspaper article of a woman named Jackie, whose daughter had died of a heroin overdose summer.
Right.
In Anchorage on Tudor and Arctic. So I found her on Facebook and private messaged her, along with a couple other people. One of them was Serena, your first interview. And then there is Taria. Taria runs a place called Damascus House. She's a recovering addict also. She was kind enough to have a bed in her place, which is not really for this situation. It's more of a transitional home to help people going from jail to society. But she did give my daughter a bed in there.
And is your daughter there now?
No, she left 3 days ago.
Okay.
So we're back to square one again.
Well,
if there would have been a bed in Anchorage the day she was released out of Ernie Turner, she would have gone into it.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have had the help that she had there.
And I know that timing is very critical when it comes to helping people right at the point when they're ready to accept help and need to have that happen right away before they crumble again. I'm so sorry for the pain that has been in your life, but it sounds like you were able to start networking with others. And I think that we've heard that a few times here, both from Special Agent Ormberg about communities helping each other, from Tracy and Byron, who are on the line with us from Bethel. Thank you, Kim, for talking with us. Tracy and Byron, are there things that you can recommend and that you're seeing maybe building in the Bethel region about how communities can help themselves and help their family members and community members?
Well, first, you know, I really think there also needs to be help for the families and friends in the community that are affected by us addicts, you know, talking about like Al-Anon, you know, counseling, things that where the family can come together, you know, like with their children, you know, our children are affected, you know, and certainly mine was, you know, and just making that aware, you know, to him, you know, that for me to be open and honest and knowing that where I've been in my addiction, that if he chooses to use, that this is where it's going to lead him. You know, so just having that open and honesty with my family and my friends, you know, in this community, just coming together as one, you know, putting all our differences aside, you know, to help our people. You know, our people are struggling. Our people are crying out for help. And I think that we just need to come together and really have, you know, faith and believe in our people that something can change, you know, for the better, because if something's not done now, it's just only going to get worse, you know, and the cycle needs to stop, you know, so that's why I'm speaking up about it. You know, this cycle, this vicious cycle needs to end. So.
And Byron, the city council is working with the police department there. What are you doing to be proactive to try to stop this inflow of heroin?
Well, we are setting up tip lines for people to come and give information, because I know there's a lot of families that want this to stop. But the thing is that we desperately need a treatment facility, because if you take away, you can't ever take away all the drugs if you leave the demand there. So we have to talk to our state legislators and to try to get, even though there's a huge deficit in the state budget, but I feel like they should look past that for a treatment facility, because as everyone said, that we desperately need it. And I've seen people go to jail for 3 years and be completely clean, and as soon as they get out, the first thing they do is go on heroin, because there's a psychological aspect to it, and they have to get treatment not only for their physical withdrawals, but for their psychological burdens that they have.
All right. Well, thank you to our guests that are on the line with us now from Bethel and from Member Station KYUK. We're talking about the very serious and painful problem of heroin and heroin addiction in Alaska. We're going to be talking to some more callers and others as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from
First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC. If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about heroin and heroin addiction and trafficking in Alaska and the growing and very serious problem that it is. Joining us now, we have a number of callers, and joining us is State Representative Dan Sadler from Eagle River. Good morning, Representative Sadler.
Well, good morning. Hi, Lori.
Thank you for calling in. And tell us what lawmakers are considering or are, I know that we have budget problems, but what's being worked on and looked at from the state legislative perspective?
Well, I'll tell you a little bit about that and then a little bit about a facility I visited yesterday. In fact, let me do the facility first, if I could.
Sure, please.
It's a very enjoyable, a very interesting program. And just getting back from Juneau, I did an open house at the Narcotic Drug Treatment Center Incorporated on East 5th Avenue. And what it is, Lori, it's a methadone clinic, and they have about 120 clients. I learned an awful lot more about heroin use and addiction and the epidemic in Alaska than I ever thought was possible, including in Eagle River. And what this program does is it provides methadone, which kind of quells the narcotic craving and allows people to conduct their work search, to get better jobs, get better living situations, and so forth. It's not a treatment center. It's not a residential. But it's an outpatient clinic that lets people take care of that craving so they can, you know, pursue a good life otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could give them a plug again, if it's the Narcotic Drug Treatment Center, it's at 520 East 4th Avenue. So if people have a heroin addiction, they want to get past it, that might be one way to approach that.
Has there, in light of the budget constraints that we have, has there been any discussion about how to address what is seen as a growing problem in the state?
Yes, there is, and I'm glad that people recognize that we do have a fiscal crunch in the state. And what we try to do, I've got responsibility for the Department of Health and Social Services budget. We've tried to prioritize the money we have to provide funds for services that we know work and that leverage the maximum amount of federal dollars. This methadone clinic, I think, gives 25% state match and gets 75% federal match, so that's a good deal for Alaska. We have a recidivism task force, which is studying what works when it comes to addiction treatment. How do you reduce people going through the cycle of treatment or maybe jail or homelessness, and trying to focus our limited dollars to the most effective treatment strategies?
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Representative Sadler from Eagle River. And we're going to take another caller now. Kathy is in Palmer. Good morning, Kathy. All right. I guess we lost Kathy. Let's then go to Olivia. Olivia is joining us by phone. Good morning, Olivia. We lost Olivia as well. All right. Well, if you're listening in and would like to call in, there's still a few minutes in our program, 1-800-478-8255 or in the Anchorage area, 550-8422. There was an email that came in from one listener about how to get the drug Narcan distributed, wondering if there's a way to get it distributed more widely so friends and family of heroin users can respond quickly when there is an overdose. This is apparently a drug to counteract overdoses. I'm not sure how that might transpire, but let's go back to our guests from Bethel, Tracy and Byron, to get some thoughts from them in our final moments of the program here. Tracy, you are in treatment now. How long have you been in treatment currently?
Today, 30 days.
And how long will you be in this kind of formal setting, this formal program, and now past 30 days?
For 2 more weeks. I'm not supposed to really talk about too much about it because of confidentiality.
Sure. Absolutely. So I understand that. When you do leave that more structured environment, are there groups or what do you see for how you will help yourself? What's your plan for how you're going to help yourself stay sober and stay away from heroin?
To really truly work my program, truly be open and honest about my recovery. This is who I am, and this is who I want to be, and I'm not that person anymore. Really advocating against heroin, being involved in my community. You know, I've never done that before, so this is a whole new thing to me, but it feels good that, you know, for me, you know, I look at it as if I save one life, you know, that is worth it. That is worth it all to me. So just keep doing what I'm doing. Keep on the right track. You know I got a lot of support and love out there for me that's behind me, and which I show the same for the people that are still out there suffering. You know, I'm here for them. You know, I'm here with open arms because I have been there. I know where they're coming from. So
All right. Well, the best of luck to you. Thank you so much for being brave enough to share your story with us. And,
thank you, Lori.
And we hope that I'm certainly hoping that you can stay on the good path that you're on now.
Yes, and also keeping my heart open to my higher power, and that's, you know, walking with God, and, you know, just knowing that He's there to protect me. So, and He's there for all of us. You know, so just truly opening my heart to that.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Tracy, and thank you, Byron. And we're going to bring Olivia on now. Olivia is calling in. Olivia, are you there?
Yes.
Thank you so much for joining us. We only have a couple of minutes left, but tell us a little bit about your in recovery. Tell us about how that's been for you.
Well, actually, I recently had to get out of treatment due to the inability to pay. So I'm kind of going backwards in my recovery right now, but it all started when I got pregnant with my first child, my daughter Brooklyn. I got into the methadone program because it really hit me hard that I was using heroin while I was pregnant, and the fact that I was pregnant got me into treatment right away, which was great, and it really changed my life. I was able to stay clean until my daughter was born. After some, you know, interventions for life with my child's health and OCS and things like that. Me and her father did have a relapse after she was born. We were not able to take her home with us, which really affected everything. So we both kind of had to start back over with our recovery just to be good parents, you know, and fix our lives. And I attribute a majority of 99% of my success to the methadone clinic. If it wasn't for that availability of treatment, then I don't think I would have been as successful as I was.
And how is that going currently? You said that you're not able to be in the formalized program because of financial issues, but are you still able to stay away from heroin and stay sober?
Yes and no. At first, you know, it was good. I was able to stay sober for about 2 weeks after being off the methadone. But then just after personal issues and life issues and depression issues, I did eventually succumb to my addiction, and I have used since I've been off methadone.
Well, we are in the final just few seconds left of the program, but thank you, Olivia, for calling in, and hopefully you'll be able to stay strong and stay on the good path to recovery. Thank you so much to all who called in and shared their stories today. It's clearly a big issue and a painful issue. Thanks to our engineer, Dave Waldron, and Josh Edge on phones. I'm Lori Townsend. Thank you for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
If you're ready to quit tobacco, Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line can help with free confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online. Now introducing Text to Quit, a way to help you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT now or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.